John Batchelor with Charles Spicer. His book is Coffee with Hitler, The Untold Story of the Amateur Spies Who Tried to Civilize the Nazis. Lloyd George met Hitler in September of 36. It is now the summer of 37 into the fall of 37. There is no longer an illusion in London that the Nazi regime is rising to power, both to remilitarize and to brutalize its citizens everywhere, but especially Jewish citizens. At the same time, the DEG in Berlin and the Anglo-German Fellowship in London are being penetrated by spies. And I hardly have time to go very far in these avenues that Charles introduces us to, but the NKVD is present. MI5 is always watching the fellowship. Also, I must note at this point that one of the hires of a young man from Cambridge who was a fluent German speaker who has been identified in Cambridge as very left is named Philby, Kim Philby. Charles, when I read this part of your book, I said, this is too much. I've had to learn the Cambridge Five entirely from the Soviet point of view. Now I have to learn it from the German point of view. Why was Kim Philby at the Anglo-German Fellowship? He was hired by them. He was paid by them.
Yes, he was asked by invited to come in to set up the publicity department, to do a bit of what we would now call PR. And just like now when, you know, companies run by older businessmen need to do stuff with social media, they will go to university graduates from a top university to get the latest thinking. That's what they appear to have done by getting Kim Philby to come and join. He's introduced by a family friend who's a member of the Sir Roger Chance, who's a family friend, who's a member of the fellowship. And he joins both as a member and a member of the staff.
And he's reporting to his cutout, or he's reporting to the Soviets, because Stalin is watching this. And a sidebar from later in the story, but let's introduce this. Stalin pays a great deal of attention to the fellowship in London and the Gesellschaft, because his fear, his anxiety, is that Germany and Britain will work together to oppose the Soviets.
Absolutely. And you know, that's a major piece of macro diplomacy, but does appear to have been prompted by this relatively small organization and this one individual in the shape of Philby, who's feeding this information all the way through to the Second World War. And he's encouraging Stalin to see the fellowship as a bogeyman that could create that sort of alliance between Britain and Germany against Soviet Russia.
A note here, the DEG, the Deutsche Englische Gesellschaft in Berlin, my note says that it was much more baldly anti-Semitic than anything that happened in London. Is that correct? Their presentation, their language, their remarks in the newspaper were consistent with Hitlerite.
Only later on, the senior politicians are certainly loyal Nazis, but a lot of the businessmen who were members and had supported it and indeed financed it were quite sceptical about the Nazi regime, and a number of them were internationalists, so weren't explicitly anti-Semitic.
We're still trying to find a way to civilize Hitler. This is now the late summer, early fall of 1937, and the Rhineland move of the previous year was seen as something you could rationalize because the Treaty of Versailles and the Locarno Treaty had not been fair-minded or generous to the Germans to rebuild. So we now need to turn to another embassy by a man who is not going to be fooled by Hitler. His name is Halifax. He's now the foreign minister, the Earl of Halifax, Edward Frederick Lindley Wood. Only Charles's book has ever taught me that name completely. When we come back, Halifax to Berghof. I'm John Batchelor. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Charles Spicer, whose wondrous new book, Coffee with Hitler, is the untold story of the amateur spies who tried to civilize the Nazis. It is now November of 1937. Halifax is the foreign minister. He is everything you could want in a hero, but he's modest about it. He's tall. He rides after the foxes. Yes, he's a master of the hunt. He also is a man who is interested to find a way to work with Germany to avoid war. And so as he arrives at Berghof, it is a completely different environment than when Lloyd George arrived in September of 36. The photograph in your book, Charles, is that after the meeting on their way out, or is that their way in? Because everybody's standing quite awkwardly.
It's a very good question. I think it's on the way out.
Yeah, that makes sense, because they look like they're departing. And the photograph suggests everything you say. Hitler was either in a bad mood that day, or he had turned on the English idea of English charm, of English romance, and was now openly hostile. Is that how to read the picture?
Absolutely. It's a very awkward lunch meeting between the two statesmen. They had absolutely no chance of understanding each other. And the famously, when he arrives, Halifax initially mistakes Hitler for a footman, and is only prevented from making the most awful gaffe by the foreign minister von Neurath going der Führer into his ear before he hands, because he was about to hand him his coat.
What is Halifax's opinion of Germany at this point? He's going to be extremely important at the table in number 10 Downing, not only for Chamberlain, but also for Churchill.
It's a very good question. I think he's very skeptical, but he is hoping that everything can be done to prevent a war.
Is he briefed well by Van Sittart? Does he arrive with complete information of what Christie's been telling them about the Christie's information from Goering is so first rate, it's like a crystal ball. Does Halifax have that when he arrives at Berghof?
Yes, he should have done, yeah.
So we're looking at men who were informed of the hostility of the Hitlerites and were still trying to work with them. And Halifax will become important for Chamberlain because he has personal knowledge of traveling to Berghof, which is something Chamberlain will attempt in September of 38. So as Halifax sits with the, I think you say they both sit and talk, and then they have a lunch that is reported is not very successful. And the does the dictator show at that point, on that instance, that he has these episodes where he goes into rants? Does he rant in front of Halifax?
Absolutely. Halifax is appalled by his some of the stuff that Hitler says. If I remember rightly, because they find themselves discussing India, where Halifax had been the viceroy of India, and Hitler explains why he didn't just shoot the Indians when they were not cooperating.
Yes, I remember that story now. I was flabbergasted when I read it. And now Halifax goes back to London. I want to make sure here before we're on the eve of 38, which is the year of, so many hard changes. Halifax goes back to London and he informs his prime minister of what he witnessed. Is that correct, Charles? And yes. He writes a lengthy report and all the cabinets see it. And we presume that the important members of parliament see it. And the...
But where Halifax gets it wrong is that he believed Hitler's protestations that he did not want war.
I see. That's why you said it was like sending a religious man to meet a fox, or no?
To meet a tiger. That was Lloyd George described it as sending a curate, which means a very junior priest in this country, to visit a tiger.
And the opinion today, all these decades later, was Halifax fooled? Did he fool himself? Because this is a man who is extremely well educated in foreign affairs.
Yes, I think he was. I think he was fooled.
By the dictator fooled Halifax. That's the result of this meeting.
At least for a short period of time, yes. And he was appalled by him, but he did believe that he didn't want to have a war.
It is now January of 1938, and we will turn to that when we next meet with Charles Spicer. The book fills in the missing pieces of how it is that Europe goes to war between Germany and everyone else, how that happens and how the men who tried to stop it left their record long afterwards that Charles now gives us in Coffee with Hitler. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.